Tonight, our main speaker is a guy that is a pretty interesting drunk. He's not like the selling crack and pimping hoes drunk, but he is the... when he first came in, his hair was a different color every time I saw him. His higher power was Jim Morrison. He wore spiked dog collars, and he was bound and determined to start an AA poetry group. And he also he wanted to do that in a towel and screaming the Doors lyrics at the top of his lungs. And but we're happy to have him. So Steve, come on up.
Everyone, Steve Wells, alcoholic. Sober today by the grace of God, Alcoholics Anonymous, since October 29th of 2000. I feel like my hair is standing. I want to thank Dave for asking me to speak. Yes, Jim Morrison was my higher power for a long time. I used to think I was like Jim Morrison. I was the incarnate of Jim Morrison and everything. I was smoking dope. I was smoking the bud with my sister in the back. My sister Sherry, where's she at? Yeah. So we were in the bathroom at my sister's house, getting high, and I was looking in the mirror, you know, and I do deep soul searching in the mirror, you know, I wrote a poem about it one time. It's called Realm of the Insane, actually, And so I'm looking in the mirror, and I had one of those moments. I was like, I'm Jim Morrison. I am Jim Morrison. And Sherry looks up at me, and she goes, huh? Like, never mind. I've always been misunderstood. Since I was young, I guess I'm going to share in a general way what I was like, what happened, what I'm like now. I was born in a family. And it was kind of like the dysfunctional Brady Bunch on the res kind of family. So I got Indian sisters, Indian brother, white sisters, black nephew. I mean it's all thrown in. You know what I mean? It half sisters, adopted brother, adopted out, adopted in, adopted. I mean, it's nuts. And we didn't have a lot of money. You know, I didn't. when I came into AA, a speaker would get up to the podium and they'd say something like, "Well, when I grew up, I had everything I wanted and everything I needed." And automatically, you don't know anything about me, anything, and because you know I'm grew up on welfare, you know, and I grew up in the trailer quarter. I did this, and no matter what it was, I was always different. It didn't matter. I came in and I hated you guys. And the reason I used to wear that choker chain, I used to wear it on my wrist because I knew that you guys liked to shake hands, and I didn't like you guys because I didn't think that you guys had ever felt the pain that I had felt, that you guys had ever known the anguish that I was going through every day. And I'm kind of melodramatic, but that's true. And I woke up and I suffered. It seemed like I'd wake up sober and I'd suffer, and I'd come to this meeting and everybody's smiling and everybody's happy, and you know, everyone's glad to see each other and everybody knows everybody, and I can't get into the circle and say anything and be accepted, and so I stand out to the other because there's no point in trying. And so I hated you guys so bad because, you know, contempt prior to investigation or whatever, so when you'd shake my hand, I'd try and poke you, you know? Who's this speaker schmooze? There's no water of it. I get dry. Thanks, Will. I know. There we go. Okay, so anyways, nervous tonight. I've been thinking about it all day long. Dave asked me yesterday. I want to thank him for asking me yesterday because the kind of week I've had, just I would have killed myself about 4 days ago. I've been kind of funky lately. You know, I've been kind of at this point. I went through this thing where I went through this thing where I thought that I keep me sober. Actually, I was talking with Tony about it a couple weeks ago at the Village Inn, and it really got me thinking. But I've been going through I was going through this thing where I thought that I keep me sober because of all the actions that I take, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's, you know, partially true. You know, I am sober because of actions of Alcoholics Anonymous, but it became me, you know, and no credit to God. You know, you can pretty much take God down and you know, throw him in the trash. You know, I keep me sober. And I remember I drove up to Bemidji a couple weeks ago, and I had a talk with God. Like, he was sitting right next to me, and I was talking to him, and I was just, you know, just dumping stuff out and about that and my theories and everything. And, you know, and I guess I found out who keeps me sober, you know, the week that I've had, you know, because it seems like when things are going really good, I think that it's all me. You know what I mean? It's all me. I do everything. My life is so wonderful because I manage so well, you know. And but I feel, remember, like at 2 years of sobriety, I wanted to die. I wanted to drink. I wanted to die. I'd lay awake at night, and I'd think about it over and over and over again. One night, I'd be, or in about 15-minute span, I'd be out in a field drinking by myself. About 15 minutes after thinking about that, I'd be in a bar, and it'd be different this time. You know, and my obsession just had me. It had me every night, and I wouldn't tell anybody about it. You know, because you can't tell. But I've been sober for over a year. I can't say anything. I'm not supposed to feel like this. You know, fear... Fear told me that I dare not. You know, I dare not walk that way. I dare not tell people. And my pride told me that I don't have to. And I was breaking commitments with the guys that I sponsored on a regular basis. There was this girl that I worked with who I had formed very unhealthy relationships with, who I broke commitments with my guys to go see. I wouldn't take phone calls. I isolated a lot. Who kept me sober then? Was my actions sure as hell didn't keep me sober then. You know, I was not doing the things to keep me sober. And, you know, and so I got to remember that. I got to remember that I know that I can't keep me sober. I've tried. I've tried to stay sober. And I don't make it too well. I make it for maybe about 5 days, you know, maybe a week if I'm lucky doing it, you know, on my own with no meetings or no nothing. I was born and stuff. We moved around a lot. My using started. I didn't drink a whole lot. I started with the smoking the bud, and I did that for a while. My first really good drunk. So I had drinking a couple times, but my first good one, obsession of the mind, phenomenon of craving. You know, perfect example of it. My grandma had passed away a few months before that. I was closer to my grandma than I was anybody in my entire life. And my mom was going out of town for the weekend, and I had sworn on my grandmother's grave that I wasn't going to drink, right? I'm not going to drink this weekend. Or no, I said, I'm not going to get drunk. That's what I said. I'm not going to get drunk. It will play on words. And so I stole some Robitussin and did that, came down, and figured I could have a Colt 45 pounder, you know, because I'm not going to get drunk. You know, I'm just going to have one, and I'm not going to get drunk. And then after that one, I didn't feel anything, so I figured I'll have a shot of Windsor. I didn't feel nothing, so then I figured, well, I'll have some Windsor Coke, you know. And then I figured I'll have a straight glass of Windsor, and through a straw, and slam it. And to make a long story short, I puked all over the place, poured bleach on it, and my mom found out. She knew it wasn't the dog that puked. I tried telling her that, and it didn't work. But I loved it, you know. I loved it. So I was in a blackout for 3 days, you know, because I woke up the next morning and my older sister wouldn't give me a cigarette unless I slammed a drink. And I smoked like a madman. I've been smoking like a madman since I was nine. And so about an hour later, I'm in another blackout, you know, saying things that they don't even say in pornos. And The true self comes out, you know. And I didn't care, you know. I thought it was kind of funny the next day or whatever. And I didn't drink again after that for a while. I continued to, you know, do the outside issues, and I did just about anything you got in front of me. I went through the medicine cabinet, took about three of everything, trying to get messed up. Took some of Sherry's kidney medicine that dyes your pee orange, and thought I was dying. I didn't care. And anyway, so, but I got into this point because I didn't like start off my using like feeling like, oh man, I have arrived and everything. This is great and wonderful. Like I said, I started out, you know, getting high, and I was getting high by myself in my room with no. We had moved out into this little hick town where I had no friends and I wouldn't talk to anybody. And I was going through, you know, emotional stuff. My grandma just died and everything. And that's all I did was get high every day. And I got to the point, though, where I was just, I'd wake up and pot didn't fix it. You know, I was always, you know, I just felt tormented. And I started writing poetry. I was suicidal, you know, a lot. I thought about that a lot. I couldn't take everything, you know. I really didn't have a lot going on in my life, but I couldn't take it. I was overwhelmed, you know. And so what happened was my mom and dad, they'd always kind of like broken up and gotten together and broken up and gotten together and stuff. And they were together, and then he moved out, and so I went with them. You know, here's my ticket out of here because this is the place. It's the place, you know what I mean? So I moved to this other place, and I picked up drinking hardcore. And I didn't drink for a really long time. But I went down real quick. I always get messed up on time. Oh, sweet. And at 17 years old, I was sleeping in a window well because I really had nothing else really going on. I drank Black Velvet a lot. I just thought it's my brother's birthday today. He's 32. He's pretty old. That's true. I didn't think he was going to make it to that, but I'm glad for that. He took me to my first meeting when I was 16. Prior to going to my first meeting, me and Sherry were in the bathroom at the hotel. Yeah. Mountain Dew can in hand, you know, holes in it and everything. So I go to my first meeting. I'm like, gone. I don't remember anything except for there was this girl who immediately became my girlfriend like 10 minutes after that, and I was going to move to Wisconsin and all this stuff. And I figured you had to be an alcoholic to date an alcoholic, and she'd gotten her year cake, so I was like, yeah, sure, I'm an alcoholic, whatever. And we get back to the hotel, and my brother comes up, and he's like, you need to read this page right here, and it's page 69 in the big book. And I remember reading it and thinking, what the hell did that mean? You know, what was that? And I didn't really take it too seriously. About a month came, and I didn't get a sponsor, and I didn't talk at meetings. I barely went to meetings. I barely did anything. A month came, and I was, like, pounded by emotions. Take a message, please. I was just pounded by emotions, and I freaked out on this girl. It was like I was drunk. She wouldn't hold my hand at the clubhouse because I was a new guy, and she wasn't supposed to date new guys, right? And so I had this can of orange soda. I whipped it at the walls, and it sprayed all over the white wall, the cream smoke-colored walls in the clubhouse and the Alano Club. And I went off, and I had this camera where I'd taken all these pictures, and I was like, screw you, screw you. And I started punching this tree and stuff, and I started bawling. And they came around, and they picked me up, and I jumped in the car, and I reached over and I wanted to cry on her shoulder, and she wouldn't let me. My mom was sitting next to me, so I reached over and I started crying on my mom's shoulder. And they were like, well, you guys need to go talk this out, right? And I was batty. So they dropped me off at her house, and she wouldn't let me in. So I stood outside for about an hour, hour and a half, screaming, yelling, just saying the most terrible things, you know, things that went into in porno. And bad things outside her house. And then I was emotionally exhausted, so I walked over to this sign, and I smashed it, and I fell over in the snowbank. And then my brother picked me up, and we went to a library, and that was a good time. Anyways, that was my first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not a lot happened, but it didn't even dawn on me. You know, it didn't even dawn on me when it got really bad towards the end, where I was scared of my shadow, where you know, life had just, where the book talks about it perfectly when it says when we awaken to face the hideous four horsemen. Terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. I read that and I understood, and it hit me because I related to it. I was before I read that I was just about to kill myself at, you know, 8 months sober or whatever, and towards the end that's where I was. You know, I woke up and that's how I felt. You know, I felt desperate. I just felt so desperate for something. There's actually a Doors tune. It goes, now I'm so alone, just looking for a home in every face I see. And that's how I felt, because I'd walk down the street and I'd look at people, and I had nobody, you know what I mean? Like, I felt like I had absolutely nobody in the world at all. And I looked down, and I was so lonely. And so what happened What happened was my last drunk, by the way, I was like a binge blackout drinker. I came out of blackouts in some weird places doing some weird things. I came out one time, I was in the middle of a highway holding a dead deer in my lap covered in blood, and convinced that my brother had stolen my bottle of Black Velvet, and I freaked out. Came to when I was losing my virginity. That was interesting. You know, a lot of weird things, but that's how I drank, like, all the time. And it was a daily thing towards the end. And what happened was I was drinking Jim Beam. That was, like, when I was living, you know, with class. When I was drinking with class, I was drinking Jim Beam because it was usually Black Velvet or Silver Wolf or, you know, whatever. And my sister had made me mad because she pushed me out of this wheelchair where I was convinced that I was a cripple. And and she pushed me out, and so I crawled after her, and I threw her on the ground. That part's funny. It is. But I did something. There were, like, two big things that I told myself I'd never do, and I did one of them that night. And I threw my sister down the ground, and I started punching her in the back of the head, you know. And I heard a speaker talk about having that moment where you kind of come out of yourself and you see yourself for what you really are, and that happened, you know. And I felt like a monster, you know. I had felt like a monster for a long time, you know. That was nothing new, but I, like, really felt bad, and I had to wake up, and Paul talks about this. I had to wake up and look at that thing in the mirror, you know, and I couldn't face that thing. I went to treatment 2 days later. I was already assigned to go, you know, and I quit my job 3 weeks before that so I could drink every day and everything. And I had 2 days left, you know, and those were going to be the 2 days because on a weekend. I was supposed to go on a Monday. And I had 2 days left, and I didn't use anything. You know, I was sober by myself in my efficiency apartment. Crazy, crazy, man. I stayed awake all night long. I went, in, you know, pretty much insane by myself. And I went into treatment. My sister brought me to treatment, And they said that I looked like I'd wanted to kill people. And when I got there, and so I remember thinking that it wasn't okay to feel the way I did when I was sober. You know, it wasn't okay to you know, be that insane when you're sober. So I told them that I was coming down off meth. And so I carried that lie, you know, for about a year into sobriety. So my actual sobriety day is October 27th. Not October 29th, 2000. So I've been lying about my sobriety date for a long time. It's actually before what it... Never mind. And so anyways, I got sober, and like I said, I hated you people. I hated you people a lot. I talked a lot of smack about everybody here. I'm sorry. You big time. Kelvin shushed me one time and gave me the eye. You know, the Kelvin... You know, he used to call him Sheriff Daniels. Me and my 1/10 measure friends that hung out in the back row, we used to sit here and talk about everybody and everything, and, you know, you guys suck, and, you know, about a bunch of cults and, you know, Nazis. And I used to, like, and that was me when I got here. But what happened was, at 8 months sober, without getting a sponsor, without going to meetings, without trying to, you know, recover from my alcoholism, nothing had changed. I was staying on my sister's couch, stealing money from her, stealing money from my nephews to buy cigarettes, hanging out with people that were tripping on Coriseden, you know, doing bad things with bad people. I went to jail. I lived with I stayed with a drug dealer for a little while, and that was my sobriety, and nothing had changed. The only thing that changed was that I felt worse. You know, I didn't think that was possible. I got sober, and I thought that everything was supposed to get good. You know, and I come to this meeting, and that's what I thought. I thought I'm going to get sober, and things are going to get good because look at the people around. You know, not thinking about the process, not thinking about the process that they had to take to get there. I'm just thinking, well, they sobered up, and their lives got good. What's wrong with me? You know, I'm misunderstood again. You know, I don't even understand myself. And so at 8 months sober, I wanted to die. And I was on my sister's couch, my older sister, in North Fargo. And this was it. This time it was for real. You know, because I had called my mom at like 3 o'clock in the morning drunk, and I'm like, I'm going to pass out on the railroad tracks. You know, it's all your fault. And I'd hang up the phone. But this time I was for real. I packed up all my stuff, and people were used to me staying at their place and then just leaving. And so packed up all my stuff, and I was going to go stare down a train. And I was set on doing it, and my big book was sitting there, and as a sick mockery of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I've been trying it for the last 8 months, going to a meeting when I needed it, and it didn't work for me. So as a sick mockery of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was thinking, yeah, let's see if they got anything to offer me, because I knew for an absolute fact they had nothing. Nothing in there was going to save my life right now. And so I open it up, and I flip it open to the table of contents, and I see a vision for you, and I'm like, yeah, okay, let's see what you got planned for me, you know? And so on page 151 and 152, that is what I just got out of it, it explained me exactly. And it goes on to talk about a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits and yada, yada, yada. But it says, he'll presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. You know, he fools himself inwardly. He'd give anything to take a half a dozen drinks. And I could relate to that, because I was dying, and I wasn't happy about my sobriety. And it said, he will know a miserableness such as few people do. He will be at the jumping-off point, and he will wish for the end. That's exactly where I was. And it's just one of those moments where I felt like God come down and punch me right in the nose. Bam! Wake up, you know. And I had what they call a moment of clarity, you know, or whatever your spiritual experience or whatever. And I knew what I had to do, because I'd been coming to meetings when I needed them. But I had heard enough in the 8 months before that I knew that I had to get a sponsor. And that's all I knew at that point. All I knew, because, you know, at the end of the talk, they say, if you're new tonight, get a sponsor, keep coming back, you know. And so I knew that I had to get a sponsor. So I asked this guy to sponsor me. And I had some sponsors before that, but I really wanted to give it a try. And I met with him every week. He started taking me through the book. He told me to get off my sister's couch. So I moved in with Howard. And Howard and this other guy, Tony, they used to wake up at like 4 in the morning in their whitey tighties and drink coffee and look at each other for about 3 hours. They never said anything. They just looked at each other. Those are my first sober roommates. They taught me a lot. Since then, I've had a lot of sober roommates. And sweet. I always get screwed up on the time. I got to keep checking. Anyways, 7 minutes left. I got a lot. And so Howard and Tony were my first sober roommates, and they almost kicked me out about every week, I think. They yelled at me a lot, and I messed up a lot. I remember quitting my job at Taco Bell because I didn't feel like riding up there in the rain on my bike, and God forbid I should call somebody for a ride. So my best thinking says, this is around 9 months of sobriety, you know, right after I'd got a sponsor and really wanted to give this thing a go. I called in and quit, and I found a ride to Monoman, though, and I hung out in this motel for a week and thought about how good my life was in the dark, you know. Not really good, but I remember just thinking, just sick, you know. And I got up there and I got really, 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 because I hung out in a motel for a week in the dark and with me and my brain. And that's not a good idea. I mean, in the light, it's not a good idea. But I got really, really sick, and I came back, and I didn't see anything wrong with that. You know what I mean? I didn't tell anybody where I was going. I didn't know there's anything wrong. I've been doing that for a long time. And Howard put his foot in my butt. Tony put his foot in my butt. My sponsor, Jim, at the time, put his foot in my butt, and I was pissed. And I remember Jim. Oh, that was the first time I'd ever gotten a sponsor's foot in my butt. And I remember when he was doing it. I was supposed to punch him, right? Like, I was supposed to. Like, I was telling my hand, punch him in the face, you know? Like, come on, do it, you know? So God definitely must have been on his side, because I really wanted to punch him in the face really bad. And what I did was I said, okay. And I've tried not to really talk back to my sponsors. You know, I've tried not to argue with them. I hope I'm doing a good job. You'll have to ask Mike, but he'll lie to you. I'm just kidding. He won't. God, shut up. But I've tried to be willing, you know, and I've tried to do the next right thing in my sobriety, and I haven't always been perfect. Like I said, you know, there have been times where I take it all back, you know. I take everything that I try to learn in the steps and I throw it out the window. I take everything that I hear in meetings. I throw everything out and I run on my own steam and I know best. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that and I'm going to, you know, and it never really turns off like I want it to. And the book talks about it on pages 60-63, you know. And then I want everybody else to do what I want them to do, and I want my life to be arranged just so, you know, perfect. Like you say this to that, you know, whatever, and it never works out, you know, at work, at relationships, with friendships, with anything, and something's gonna get in there, and then I become resentful, and then I isolate, and that's just kind of how I roll, but. I don't know. My higher power isn't Jim Morrison anymore. Thank God. I went through this thing. I went through this thing. I didn't listen to Jim Morrison or the Doors for a year. I packed up because I got this new DVD, right? And my alcoholism will take any route to get me to drink anything. It will tell me anything. So I got this DVD and Jim, and it's live in Europe, and Jim's up there singing and stuff. And it's like I was back in the bathroom again, man. I was like, oh, that's me. That is me. And this is like a year ago. I mean, so I just opened the box like a week ago. And that's me. I could be that. I could. And so my sponsor told me to pack up everything and give it a year, and so I did that. But I don't even know why I said that. But I have a relationship with a power greater than myself to do that. I don't always understand that. I misconstrue that I'll hear somebody else say something and wish that my relationship was like that with God and I wish that I could be so connected and you know a lot of things. But the relationship that I have with him, I'm exactly right where I need to be with God right now, you know. I got to remember that. I got to try and accept progress, you know, because 5 years ago, I guarantee you, I hated God. I hated God more than anything. Before I went through the steps, I hated God more than life itself. And I never asked to be born, and God made me born, and I hated God. I had huge resentments and everything. But anyways, But I did a fourth and fifth step, and then I waited on a six and seven for a while, and that's when things got really goofy. And after a while, though, luckily I didn't drink, and I did a six and seven, and I went on it, and I made amends, and I went through the steps. I continued to come here. I continued to call my sponsor every Thursday at 5:45. I meet with the guys that I sponsor, and I try not to break it off for anything. And I try to do the next right thing today, you know. And my relationship with God today, definitely, I love God with everything that I am. And there are times when I feel like God is like where it's almost like I can just feel the power like everywhere, you know. And I can just see it everywhere, and everything's so great, and everything's so wonderful. And then there are times when I'm at the bottom, you know. But I'm grateful for those times. I'm running out of time, and I only had one glass of water. But if you're new tonight, and you don't feel very willing, if you're new tonight and you don't want to do these things, if you're new tonight and you don't agree with these things, try it. I mean, what do you got to lose, really? I mean, like, I came in and you know, people that I respect now who I hated then would say things like, go to meetings and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I was like, that life sucks. You know, I don't even want that. But I was saying, why do that? 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 And now I need to say to myself, why not? You know, why not do it? And it saved my life so far, and I've seen it save a lot of other people's lives. And I'm grateful to have Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new tonight, get a sponsor. Keep coming back. If you don't like this meeting, find a meeting that you like. I hear people talk smack about this meeting just like I used to do. And I'm going to tell you the same thing they told me. We don't have a monopoly on AA. There's 60 meetings a week in the Fargo-Moorhead area. If you don't like this one, go find one. And I'm grateful to be here tonight. Get a sponsor. Keep coming back. That's all I got. Thanks.